No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show, which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype your questions to DBSRADIO and the number one. Tonight we have a special guest. We hope. We haven't been able to get a hold of her, but we hope we're going to bring her on in a minute. Her name is Medea Benjamin, and she is the co-founder of Code Pink. And Code Pink is a human woman-led peace group, and she is also the founder of the human rights group Global Exchange. She's been an advocate for social justice for more than 40 years, described as one of America's most committed and most effective fighters for human rights by New York Newsday, and one of the high-profile leaders of the peace movement by the Los Angeles Times. She was one of 1,000 exemplary women from 140 countries nominated to receive the Nobel Peace Prize on behalf of the millions of women who do the essential work of peace worldwide. We hope that we'll have Medea on with us. She's an amazing woman. I've known her for several years, and we're just having a little problem getting in touch with her. And until that happens, Maria and I are going to talk, and hopefully Medea's fine. Maybe her car broke down or something. I don't know, but we'll see if we can't get her on the air in a few minutes. Meanwhile, let's talk. Maria, how are you?
Michael, welcome, and thank you, as always, to have this opportunity to visit with you and our listeners once a week. And we were sharing before the program started that today is literally the happiest day of the year for me. I love to spring forward. Forget the hour that we lost. It means lighter, longer, warmer afternoons, evenings. And, spring is around the corner and summer is thereafter. So it's just like, yay, I love this day.
Well, that may, you know what, I love this day too, but that may be in California. We don't know what's happening in Washington because on, I think it was Thursday, it was 70 degrees, and on Friday we had snow.
I heard that.
So it's just wild what's going on.
Yeah. We had a couple of days like that, of course no snow, but we had frost and stuff, and then it would be balmy t-shirt weather, and it's like, hello. But yeah, that's been all over the country. But still, I love it that you love this day too, because it just is. It just seems like everything is possible. Hope springs eternal.
Well, and this is one of the greatest things about Washington, D.C., is that we really have no tornadoes, no earthquakes, no hurricanes, we've got a really nice climate here, except that it gets so unbelievably muggy for about 3 weeks in August that you can't walk from your front door to your car without wanting to take a shower. But other than that, we have pretty consistent weather. While there's been a lot going on, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, well, one of the reasons that I know you wanted our guest today is because of the International Women's Day that we had this week, and wear red. And I put it in my calendar. I wore this bright red V-neck sweater all day. I was exception. I couldn't believe I went to class that night, too. The kids didn't have a clue. And I don't know what happened. Like, did the message not get out, or does it not resonate?
Well, young people have a life. You know, that's part of the problem is they don't pay attention. You know what I mean? They're too busy doing other stuff. And one of my favorite quotes in politics was that I was driving across the Minnesota on election day, trying to get Native Americans out to vote. And I was listening to conservative talk radio and some guy said, I've got good news and bad news. And he said, the bad news is they're going to legalize marijuana in Alaska. It's on the ballot. They're trying to legalize it. He said, the good news is all the people that are for it will forget to vote. And the truth of the matter about young people is, right, they're tied up in stuff. And they're like, oh, it was Tuesday. It was the first Tuesday in November.
Between two clinics, most days of the week with my internship and seeing clients, and the staff nor the clients wore red. It literally, and here I am in Southern California, Los Angeles, no less. And if it was that underrepresented here, I would imagine that would be the case throughout most of the country.
Well, I don't know. All I can tell you is in Washington, there were demonstrations. And in fact, so many people participated in certain counties in the Washington area that they closed schools. They had to close schools in two counties, Arlington County, and I forget the other one, but they had to close schools because so many teachers said that they weren't going to come to work.
They did that part of it. Yeah, see, I don't agree with that part. Michael's referring to the fact that it was don't show up to work to show the contributions that women make. I that part of it I didn't like. I hear what you're saying, though.
75% of teachers are women. So, you know, they successfully closed down the school system. And you know what? In most cases in Washington, D.C. public schools were open. Fairfax County, Montgomery County, all the big counties around town were open. Arlington is one of the smallest school systems in the area. So I guess it was easier to close it down. But, yeah, I think you saw demonstrations in several cities, but the idea of walking out and shutting down your work operation for the day, that really didn't go over.
What better way to get the message out than to have a woman in her position wearing red? See, not staying at home, then she's not seen. But if she's got red on and she's in the workplace, then that's making a statement.
Yeah, maybe assuming that men notice something like that. You know, sometimes you got to beat men over the head to get their attention.
Well, you guys are visual, so you would notice that.
Yes, we are visual. But we're not looking at the color of your sweater, unfortunately, Maria. And therein lies the rub sometimes. I could see a guy looking at a woman and then say, oh, what's the sweater red? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You know. But
paying attention to other parts of the anatomy.
Women
not
are
the color
upset.
Of her wardrobe.
Women are certainly upset in America, at least liberal women. I don't know about conservative women, but liberal women are upset and they're making their voices known. The only thing I can say about it, I stand behind them 100%, but the only thing I can say about it is it's a little too late. I mean, where were they in November? Where were they in November?
I didn't take this. The reason I participated in it is because it wasn't political. And I am a conservative woman in terms of my fiscal responsibilities and leanings. But because it wasn't political, that's why I participated. This had nothing to do with Trump being in the White House. This is about women and inequality and no wage parity and sex trafficking and those issues that are global that every woman should be concerned about.
Well, right. International Women's Day certainly is. But they were trying to get a bump, I think, from people that were, you know, liberal women that were disappointed in Trump. And I think domestically that had a lot to do with it. But yes, internationally, there are tons of issues that affect women that really we all need to deal with. Some of them you've already mentioned, like human trafficking and rights and women's rights in other countries.
But well, and the job inequality and parity or lack thereof financially. That's why I got involved, because it wasn't political. I see what you're saying, and the fact that they tried to politicize it, to me, defeats the whole point. Then the message is being diluted.
Well, I think certainly, we talked about this. I think we talked about this on the last show, that we haven't even gotten the Equal Rights Amendment passed. And
yes,
Nevada has resurrected it, and it's going to pass it. And maybe women will stand up and do that now. Maybe they will. And I hope they do, because they should be part of the Constitution. I mean, it's amazing to me that we're in the new millennium and we still don't have, we still don't have women recognized as a group in the Constitution. And it's important. I mean, there are people, there were arguments made when the Equal Rights Amendment was out there that this wasn't necessary, but I think it is necessary, because we have to remember that women were excluded from the Constitution when it was written. We go all mm-hmm. the way, we're always talking about the framers and what their intent was. Well, their intent was not to include women. I mean, that's very clear. Women, I mean, I'm not exactly sure what their status in America in 1789 was, whether they were considered property or they were just considered subordinate to their husbands, but they weren't recognized as regular citizens. And so for no other reason than that, I would support the Equal Rights Amendment to recognize women. But it's been a big week in Washington. Beyond the International Women's Day came and went, and without a lot of fanfare, I think, here.
I would agree. And so what do you want to refer to first with this big week again?
Well, I think the Affordable Care Act is the big thing on the burner right now that I think is going to be a really watershed moment, not only for this new administration, but also for the country. I don't know how you feel. I mean, I'm health policy is not something that I have a particular expertise in. But what I see happening politically is I see the healthcare bill going into the political sausage maker, and I don't see how it's going to get any better by doing it. You know what I mean? I see all the foes lining up and all the people that are supporting it lining up, and they're lining up in the same positions that they had when Obamacare came along. So I don't know how they're going to improve it.
Improve it? Is that what you said?
Improve it? Yeah.
Well, actually truly more affordable would be an improvement, because I don't know about you. I pay for mine privately, private pay. I have Anthem Blue Cross, and it went from $600 before Obamacare to almost $1,000, and that's just for me a month. And it's like, what's affordable about this? It's not for me, but I wouldn't be without it. I could have qualified for the exchange, but I didn't want to do that. You know, I mean, I pay for it myself. So that's what I'm hoping they can do. As the sound bites come out, that's what they're saying they want to do.
Right. I understand that. And I think that everybody would like that. And you know that I was covered by Blue Cross Blue Shield when I had my business, and I started it and I got, you know, when I started my business, of course, I started it with $800 at my kitchen table. So I had health insurances like Joe's of New Jersey or something, you know, and I would go to the hospital. I this is a true story. I went to the emergency room one time because I needed fluid. They sent me to the emergency room, and I got there and I gave my, you know, whatever Joe's of New Jersey health card to the receptionist. And she looked at me and said, "You better have a MasterCard or a Visa." So, they looked at my, you know, it was like Central Health Plan of America. They looked at it and the woman's like, I don't know what this is, but we take 10,000 health plans and this isn't one of them. So,
wow.
You know, after that, when I got married, you know, I have my business was about 10 years old when I got married. I got Blue Cross Blue Shield because, you know, I wanted my family to be covered. And it was $550 a month. And when 15 years later, my wife took a job with the school system to get health benefits because my health insurance had gone up. And this was, maybe 15 years ago. My health insurance had gone up to $2,400 a month.
Yikes.
Back then. Yeah.
Yikes.
So, and that's
of course,
one
that
of the
was
problems.
The wife and three children. Right.
Yes. Yes.
So
for the family.
Still, yeah.
No, but it started out at $550 for the wife and for family coverage. So
well, that's what I'm
that
hoping
much.
Is, I mean, because the sound bites are saying we want you to have choices. We want you to choose to have insurance if you want to have insurance. We're not going to mandate it. And we want it to be affordable. So that's all I can go on is what I'm hearing. But you're in the where everything's happening. So I don't know if you have other information.
Well, I don't have other information, but what I see happening, and I've only read a synopsis of the plan. You know, I haven't read the plan. It's 100 pages. But what I don't see happening is I don't see them going after the insurance companies and the drug providers. And I think these guys are, you know, that's one of the things about that's the primary cause of increased costs, I think. And unless you go after the insurance companies, you know, they're saying that there are counties in America where many counties where there are only one health care provider under Obamacare.
Well, there's some states where there's only one.
Right. There's some states where there's only one. So I want to see them go after the insurance companies. I don't think that these guys are doing any more than any other business in America does. Okay. You try to make a profit and they make a profit by cutting out that which is most expensive and focusing on that which is most profitable. And that's really what we need the government to do. If the government's going to step into the middle of it, we need them to control that, I think, because otherwise costs are still going to spiral out of control. Another thing that bothers me is that they're taking out this provision that requires you to be in it. Now, I understand in the health insurance program. Now, I understand from the Republican standpoint, they've always been for less government in your life. They don't want, but the problem is that if you cut out, and this is for people under 35, if you cut out those people, you're going to have a hell of a mess in premiums because those are the guys that receive the least health care. You know, guys my age, I'm 63, people my age receive a lot more health care than.
But they were counting on those millennials especially to take out the insurance to help support the people that are older. And they found that they weren't doing that. They would rather get the fine than pay the premium.
Right.
So it did kind of backfire, which is why the premiums went higher than expected, because they didn't have that padding from the younger folks.
But they didn't change that. They kept the fine in there. It now goes to the insurance company. You now get a 30% penalty if you don't sign up and then you do sign up. So the fine's still there. It's just where it's just going to the insurance company. And I really don't know if the fine's the best way to get compliance, but there's got to be a way to get the 35-year-olds into the program to make it viable financially, I believe. You know, it also
works. We've got Medea on the line now. And Doug, if you can connect me via Skype, I'm available via Skype too. So we have Medea and Maria on Skype.
Medea's with us?
Yeah, so sorry. Hey, daylight savings time did it.
No, that's okay. That's okay. We understand. And we're so happy to have you with us, Medea. We read a little bit about your biography when we started the show, but I've got to tell you that this is a woman that I've seen in action many times on Capitol Hill, and your group is just amazing. It's just amazing, Medea, and I think you may, in fact, be the biggest badass on Capitol Hill.
How do you like that introduction?
I love it.
I mean, really, I don't know if you remember this, Medea, but the last time we saw each other was in Cleveland in front of the Republican National Convention, and you were out there demonstrating, and I walked up and talked to you for a minute, and I went in because I had been an invited guest, the next thing I knew, I looked up on the Jumbotron, and there they were arresting you. So, that's my first question. Why did you go to the Republican convention?
Well, I go to every convention. I go to the Democrat. I go to the Republican. I used to go to the Greens. I should go to that one as well. You know, I think it's great to be where the nation is focusing on policy issues and direction that we want to go in. And especially when Donald Trump was going to be the next president, gosh, I certainly wanted to be there to voice some objection and incredulity, I must say. I mean, it still is. I think a lot of us still wake up and say, is this a nightmare or is this real?
Yeah, we certainly do in Washington. I can tell you that, where we voted 92% for the other candidate, we certainly do that. And let me ask you something. Do you think that there's, as a member of the Green Party, do you think that the Green Party will grow as a result of what happened in November?
Well, you know, I'm not a member of the Green Party. I'm an independent.
Oh, you're not? Okay.
And I ran on the Green Party ticket at one time.
Uh-huh.
And I certainly believe in Green Party and third parties and a multi-party system that goes beyond the two parties. But I think that our system is just so broken, and the reason I don't put more of my time with the Greens is because it's so difficult under the circumstances to get traction as a third party. So, you know, what comes first? Changing our laws so that third parties can get on the ballot in 50 states and change the way the debates work so that people who are outside the two-party system can get into the debates. It's all very broken, and until we do some real restructuring, it's very hard. Now, I do believe that the Green Party and any other third party have to work at the local level, and there, I think, there are so many nonpartisan races that people can challenge, whether it's city council races or Board of Education or those kind of things. So that's where I think at this moment in our history, third parties should really put their energy.
Well,
I ask, Medea,
what
was your inspiration to get so involved initially? What was the genesis? What spoke to you? Was it a cause, a candidate?
Well, it goes back to being in high school when the Vietnam War was going on, and that really did it to me for life, to realize that my government was lying to me about something so incredibly important as to why we were sending our loved ones thousands of miles away to kill people that we shouldn't be killing. And the recognition about how policies like that affect people's lives in terms of the very basic thing of are you going to live or not, to say nothing about how we spend our money as a nation. And so I've been involved ever since. And I think when I look at Donald Trump now saying he wants to spend another $54 billion on the bloated Pentagon, it just breaks my heart because there are so many things that we need to do in this country and the world to make it a better place instead of spending it on more war.
And so you took that passion and that, what would you say, impotence, if you will, and decided that you were going to make that your life cause, is to become more aware and let other people know, too, that what we're being told isn't true?
Yeah, and I took different paths along the way to see what would be the most useful, and I did try working a lot overseas and realized that the influence of my government spread way beyond domestic issues. I worked in Africa and Latin America and Asia. I used to work for the United Nations. And I also saw the negative influence of giant corporations on the lives of some of the poorest people in the world. So I suppose it was both government and corporate abuse that led me to focus my whole life on how do we move our government in a more positive direction and how do we lessen the power of big corporations.
Well, I got to tell you, that's something that really bothered me during the campaign, was hearing people say, you know, that one of the reasons they supported Donald Trump was that he was a businessman, as if that was a good thing, and that he was going to run the government like a business. And all I could think to myself was, the reason we have government is because business can't run everything or shouldn't run everything. So it really bothered me to hear people say, oh, he's a businessman, he'll run it like a business. Oh, God help us if he runs the country like a business, is my opinion.
Well, that's right, and we've already seen so many pieces of our government being privatized, whether it's the privatization of the prisons or the privatization of so much of the military and, of course, education and on and on. And as you well know, businesses... They're supposed to look after the bottom line and sure. not about the public good. So, yes, when you think of running government as a business, you think of the ways that we will or Donald Trump wants to take away even more of the public functions of the government and turn it over to businesses that only want to turn a profit.
So what do you think about the travel ban? I know that, you know, you want world peace, you want a peace economy, you care about accountability, you care about what's going on in Saudi Arabia and Yemen and Palestine. So what do you think of the travel ban? What kind of effect do you think that's going to have on us in on the world stage?
Well, that's an important question because Americans don't get through our mainstream media any sense of how the rest of the world is looking at us. And it's
right.
So many people around the world are absolutely appalled at this travel ban on so many different levels. If you look just at the issue of Syria, I mean, these poor, starving people who are fleeing violence and the U.S. not giving refuge to people who have suffered through years of a war that's left hundreds of thousands of people dead, it just shows us as a callous, a non-caring country. And then you look at the six other countries, now five, that they've since they've taken Iraq off the list, and you see that those are countries that, for the most part, we have been bombing for many years. And we are responsible for so much of the suffering going on in that region, and yet we don't want to take any responsibility for it. So I've been to Yemen, for example, where the U.S. has been helping the Saudis to destroy this already poor country, and now we don't want to let Yemenis into the United States. People just see it as, you know, the U.S. is there when it comes to bombing, and then not there when it comes to helping families who are the victims of the violence.
Well, you know, I think that's such an important point because when I was in high school and was protesting the war, I remember an incident where the Pentagon paid a lot of money for a PR film where this guy went over, a reporter went over and talked to the people of Vietnam in the rice paddies and other places, and he asked them questions like, what do you think of the Americans? And they would say something in Vietnamese, and then he would say, oh, they love the Americans, they're glad the Americans are here. But then when they played the film for the first time, and people that actually spoke Vietnamese said, that's not what he's saying. He's saying, we hate you people. You're bombing us. You're killing us. And I remember that. And I don't think, I think when people originally saw, this was a film that was paid for, edited, and put out before anybody realized what the people were really saying. And I think it's because we assume in this country that everybody thinks we're great. And you're right.
Well, and now we don't even pretend to hear from people. I mean, when's the last time you heard somebody from Yemen, positive or negative? You just don't hear them. When did you hear an Afghan villager talk about should the U.S. continue to be there after 15 years? When's the last time you heard somebody from Pakistan talk about the drone strikes and the effect on their villages? We just don't hear it. And, I try to get to listen to news from other places, whether it's Al Jazeera or BBC or Russia Today even, or the European press, and you get a totally different sense of the world. You really do hear from people from other countries. And it's even worse now with Donald Trump, because all we hear about is, what crazy thing did Donald Trump do today and all the responses to it. So I think the American people, unfortunately, are so ill-informed. And it means that the government can get away with doing policies that make us even more insecure in the name of national security.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Maria. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, so it's 120 days that he's putting this executive order into place. And I want to, first of all, I don't care what people think about us. I don't care what people think about me. That's not my concern. I want to do what's right, either morally or with integrity, and be congruent and stuff. So I don't care what other people say. I want to do what's right by Americans, and I want to do what's right and compassionate for the rest of the world. But why is a travel ban wrong in theory?
Well, first, we know that nobody from these countries has done anything to people here at home, so it doesn't make any sense from that front. If you were going to really pick a country whose people from that country had harmed Americans, you would pick Saudi Arabia, but the U.S. Wants to keep getting oil and selling weapons to Saudi Arabia, so they're not on the list. And you might say, Maria, you don't care what people think of us, but if they hate us, then they might want to take revenge against us. And that does reverberate negatively on our national security. And I think that having people see America as a nation that is compassionate, that doesn't spend its resources on getting involved in the internal affairs of other countries, but on helping people with humanitarian aid, that makes us much more loved in the world than we are right now. So, one, it doesn't make sense. Two, it doesn't work. And three, I think that we have to distinguish between small groups of people who might want to do us harm and actually dig beneath it and see why, and then the general population. And in all countries, the general population are good, decent people who are not involved in things like terrorist activities.
Yeah, and I would only add to that that America has been a great symbol of democracy around the world, and to diminish that in any way, and that's what bothers me most about the travel ban and the wall and the other symbols that we're putting out there, really affects the global stability of all countries, I believe, because we have been traditionally such an important symbol. You know, I hate to see us go from the symbolism of the Statue of Liberty to the symbolism of a wall that says keep out. But yeah, I agree. I think it hurts. And I think it hurts domestically, too. We've now seen more than 150 incidences at Jewish cemeteries and at days you know, Jewish day schools and all sorts of racist things going on in the United States. I think it adds credibility to that too, that somehow that's the right course of action, that we should keep people out. And that's what bothers me about it. And you're right. Every one of those people on 9/11 that were on those planes were Saudi Arabians. They were our allies. They weren't from Yemen. They weren't from Iraq. They weren't from Iran. So I got to agree with you 100%, Medea.
So how is this different, though, than like Brazil requires all U.S. citizens to have a visa that you get in advance in order to travel there?
Well, the U.S. requires that citizens have visas to get in here. That's no different, but that's very different from saying we're not going to let you in here.
Because what I assume that meant is that we have a system that needs to be repaired, and so we're going to take this time out, if you will, to do it. I understand how uncompassionate that sounds on the basic level. I do get that. So I hear what both of you are saying in that regard. It just seems that something isn't working, and maybe taking this time out will help fix it? Or you feel that it's just a knee-jerk reaction, or it's too much? Too little, too late?
Well, first of all, when you talk about refugees coming, they have an incredible vetting that takes about 2 years. So it is very, very hard for people to get refugee status. And already the regulations are in place to make sure that the people coming in are people that we want here. And then in terms of people coming from other countries, they do have to get visas. This regulation is saying we're not going to give you visas to come here. And in the visa process, there's all kinds of questioning of people that happens before they get their visas.
Because I thought the whole point was to stop illegal immigration. Because if somebody has a visa, then they're coming here legally.
No, I think you're confusing two things. You're confusing the issue around immigration and the issue around the ban of people coming from six different countries. Well, coming from six different countries is not about a visa. It's just saying we are not going to let you in here. We're not going to give you visas. The other issue, which affects to a large part the Latino population, about immigrant status and people being here legally.
Well, and you know, I think that perfect explanation for the travel ban, Maria, is that it is knee-jerk. It's knee-jerk, and it plays to a sentiment that I think is unfortunate in our country. I think I think they're like TSA agents at the airport that are wanding an 85-year-old woman on crutches. They're not doing any good. They're just making some people feel like something's being done. And another thing that really bothers me about the wall argument, for example, as people will say to me, well, you know, if you go to Mexico, you need to do this or that. Well, when did we use Mexico as a model for the way that we should, you know, conduct our affairs? We're America, you know.
But I think we're confusing whether you go to Mexico or you're talking about Brazil. The U.S. already had all kinds of limitations on who could come here, how you get the visa, how long the visa is for. Our borders are just not open for anybody to come as long as they want. Now, of course, there are people who do come illegally and people who overstay their visas. That's a different issue. That's how much do we want to enforce. And we want to go after people who've been living here for decades. But the U.S. is a hard place, always been a hard place for people to come to in terms of being able to get a legitimate visa to stay for a significant amount of time.
Well, I just had somebody send me a question, Medea. They want to ask, they usually come through Skype, but this actually came on the email. They want to know what you think about the relationship that it seems to be going on now between the Trump White House and the Israelis, and how this is affecting things in Palestine?
Every U.S. administration has been, to my opinion, one-sidedly pro-Israeli. Even the Obama administration, where the Obama administration took some very slight objections to the settlement growth. If the Obama administration was really going to object to the continued building of settlements, it could have said we're going to stop the 3.1, which is about $3.8 billion a year that we give to you. But Donald Trump is taking it even further, and we see that from the person David Friedman, who he has appointed to be the next U.S. ambassador to Israel, because this is somebody who is known for not only supporting settlements, but financially giving money to build settlements. Somebody who wants to change U.S. policy from one of supporting to a two-state solution and wants to move the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. These are all things that will dangerously make the situation even more volatile. So I think it's quite upsetting the way that Trump wants to move U.S. policy in the direction of even more one-sided and more supportive of the most conservative people in Israel.
And do you think, this is a follow-up from me, do you think the fact that we are so focused on what's going on now in America between the replacement of the Affordable Care Act and our new president and, you know, all the other things that are going on domestically, do you think this provides cover for people overseas who want to move their agenda forward because they feel that America no longer is focused on them?
Well, you know, I think it would probably be very good for a lot of places around the world if America focused more domestically and not on interfering in the internal affairs of other countries. We've done that way too much in our history. And in the end, even in the Middle East, it is the people from the region who are going to have to figure out how to live with each other. And the U.S. involvement has done nothing but made things even worse. And you can look at other places around the world, for example, where the U.S. Is the only country in the world that has hundreds of foreign military bases. And I think if we really wanted to save money and make ourselves more liked around the world, we would close down those military bases and let our military focus on defending us here at home, not interfering in other countries.
Any more questions, Maria?
Yes, I wanted to ask you, Medea, what did you think about the International Women's Day this week? Because I was telling Michael, I'm in Los Angeles, and I didn't see a hint of anything that was around our area. And going to the website of the International Women's Day, they talked about events around the world. Los Angeles wasn't listed.
Well, there was certainly an event in Los Angeles because I know people that went to it, but it was on the weekend before. I think that if we look at what happened the day after Donald Trump's inauguration, the massive women's march, mm-hmm. I mean, that was something glorious. It was very ambitious to try to pull something off so soon afterwards, and I think many people were confused by the whole idea of a strike, and, of course, a lot of women weren't able to do things like that. But given all of that, it was still remarkable that International Women's Day, which is rarely ever even acknowledged in the United States, it's a big deal in some other countries, but not in the U.S., there were more people now, thanks to Donald Trump, I think, who even knew it was International Women's Day and who participated in something than has happened, I would say, in decades in this country.
Then that may be why, because we're slower to come to it in acknowledging it and honoring it. And before you joined us, I was sharing with Michael that one of the things that I precepts that I disagreed with their focus was to stay home. And I said, how much better for you to have be in the spotlight that if you're in the workplace and you're wearing red for to honor the International Women's Day cause than for you to be absent?
Yeah, well, I didn't like to focus so much on the strike part. I was part of an action in Washington, D.C. that was wonderful. It was around equal pay for women, and it was started out at the Labor Department, and it was a lovely march and very spirited. So I think there were different things that happened around the country, but I would say that the focus was perhaps a little bit off, and there wasn't really enough time, and most people didn't even know that it is International Women's Day. It'll be interesting what we can pull off for Mother's Day in March, because that's a holiday people understand a lot more. And certainly there'll be a lot more things that women are going to be coming out for in the coming months.
Can you let our listeners know what we should pay attention to or what might not be on our radar in regard to Mother's Day?
Well, I think Mother's Day, because it is unbeknownst to a lot of people, a holiday whose origins go back to 1865 and a call by Juliet Ward Howe to disarm, I think it's a great time for women to come out and say, let's not spend so much money on the military, let's put it into the needs that we have at home and humanitarian needs overseas. But your listeners probably know that there's all kinds of really important mobilizations coming up, from Tax Day on April 15th, telling Donald Trump, you can't show us your taxes, you should not be our president. The April 22nd, Earth Day, when scientists are going to go out of the labs and onto the streets. The climate march being organized for April 29th. That's just a couple of things that are happening, but there's going to be just mobilizations every single month.
So I wonder, is that going to dilute the message, though, Medea, instead of having, and because it, you know, down 3 or 4 months, the line, people are going to say, well, yeah, we've done this. We've heard this. You know, it's
like,
I don't think so.
I mean, there's hundreds of millions of people in this country. If they don't come out for one thing, they can come out for another thing. And that's just a reflection of things that are happening on other levels, of people who are doing these town hall meetings, or people who are doing sit-ins in their congressional offices, or people who are organizing at the local level or deciding to run for office. There's just a lot of movement going on, and the large mobilizations are just one aspect of a people who are really in resistance.
I have to thank you for coming on, Medea. I've got to tell everybody, besides her activism, Medea has written 9 books, including Drone Warfare, The Killing by Remote Control, and The Kingdom of the Unjust, Behind the U.S.-Saudi Connection. And you should read these things, and you should plug into her website. Tell everybody how they can get onto your website, what the website is, Medea.
It's codepink.org. We are a women-led organization promoting peace, but men are most welcome to join. We were very large and had hundreds of branches during the Bush years. During Obama, we lost a lot of the support, just like most other organizations did, and now we are building back up again. So we encourage people to go to codepink.org and sign up and get our action alerts every week and join us.
And I'll tell you, if you're an activist and you want to make a difference, or you want to become an activist, get in touch with these women. They are just amazing, I've got to tell you. I'm honored that you come on my show, on our show, and I look forward to working with you in the future. And you have to come back, because we didn't even get to talk about statehood, which I know you guys support for the people of the District of Columbia. So I'd like to have you back to talk about that in the future. I know that you care much about government accountability. I'm proud to say that I was in 2010, I received an award from the Government Accountability Project for 20 years of service. So we have a lot more that we have to talk about. But thank you, Medea Benjamin, for coming on the show. And thank you for all the great work you do. We're all
terrific.
We're all in debt to you.
Thank you so much. And in terms of government accountability, let's audit the Pentagon.
All right.
Thanks so much for having me on.
All right. Thank you, Medea.
Yes, bye-bye. Thank you. Goodbye. That's so... So whether or not I agree with some of her opinions, I am in awe of what she has done single-handedly.
Oh, yeah.
That's the best example of if you have a voice and you have a vote and you have a paycheck, be responsible with it and put it where your passion is. And she did just that.
And you have to, if you ever come to Washington, I'll try to get an appointment so we can meet with this woman. You have to see this woman. She's amazing. She's this petite, lovely, petite, quiet, gentle, I'm a person, but she's so effective. They're so effective. They're so resolute, and they have so much courage, and they stand up for the things they believe in. And I don't know that I believe in everything they stand for either, but I believe in their methods and how they go about it. They're just an amazing group. They're an inspiration to me. So,
just as a side note, because International Women's Day itself didn't put politics in, that's why, because I did my research, and their mission statement is to help women and girls achieve their ambitions, challenge conscious and unconscious bias, call for gender-balanced leadership, value women and men's contributions equally, and create inclusive, flexible cultures. Now, who could disagree with that?
And I would think that Code Pink would stand for all those things. And additionally, what they attempt to do is give women a voice and say, we're here and we're not going to move until you listen to us. And that's very, very, that's a very, very effective message. And they deliver it very effectively. So we'll have Medea back if she's willing. We'll have her back on the show to talk about some other things, but I think we're pretty much running out of time here, and I want to dedicate this song from to Medea and her followers as we go out tonight, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank Have you. A great week.
Enjoy the sunshine.
That's right. Longer days. Thank you, Michael.
All right. Thank you. Give the people their right to vote.